its current state here on 90.5 WKAR. I'm Mark Bayshore. Good to know this morning that the area near the Boston Marathon finish line is reopening to the general public. I guess traffic was allowed to flow all the way down Boylston Street this morning for the first time since April 15th. Delivery trucks made their way down the street, although there was still a heavy police presence, but that is moving forward in Boston. We have a really neat show for you here today. Bob Trezise of LEAP joins us in just a little bit to update the Nile wave situation. Apparently that has been resolved. We'll see how the dust settled on that. MSU Wind Symphony, and what's ahead for Michigan's farmers with all of the rain? We will find out from Bob Boehm of the Michigan Farm Bureau. But first today, Democratic State Representative Tim Grimmel is serving his first full term in the Michigan House. It's also his first as leader of his party's caucus. And we've been working diligently to get Representative Grimmel on current state, and we're happy to welcome him to the program. Nice to see you.
Good morning, Mark. It's great to be on the show.
I'd like to, first off here, get your assessment of the so-called Skunk Works project headed by Governor Snyder's Chief Information Officer, David Behan. Now, for our listeners, this is a group that was operating apparently off most people's radar, off the media's radar, until last Friday. For some months, it's been investigating how to lower public education costs with technology and through a funding process that resembles vouchers. What do you know about it, and what do you think about it?
Well, unfortunately, because the process has not been transparent and has been cloaked in secrecy, we don't know a whole lot of details about it. As the name Skunk Works implies, this stinks. The fact is that the governor has paid lots of lip service to transparency, but then has had this group meeting in secrecy without any openness or transparency at all. We know a couple of things. One is that they are proposing, quote, value schools, end quote, which seems to be an attempt to do education on the cheap for a lot less money. And I think in all likelihood, that's not only going to lower the cost of education, but it's going to lower the results and achievement of our children. The idea of voucherizing the public school system and eroding local control, local accountability is a bad idea. And the idea that we can simply substitute computers for teachers and plop kids down in front of a computer and think that they're going to learn, I think, is very misguided. That may be good for a number of students who are self-starters. But I certainly know that when I was a kid, if you had plopped me down in front of a computer, I would have been doing everything but my work. I am very skeptical of this idea that somehow we can substitute computers for teachers for a significant number of students. I think that's very misguided.
Some critics also maintain it circumvents the Constitution. Do you agree with that? And can you help us understand that criticism?
Well, I had not previously heard that criticism, and so I'm not sure in what way they believe that it circumvents the Constitution. I know that there is a prohibition in the Constitution around giving tax dollar support to private schools. I'm not sure that this would do that. Again, it's hard to know, given that we don't know all the details because this group's been meeting in secret. Typically how it's been described is that it would voucherize the public school system, but within the context of the public school system. So without knowing more details about exactly what this secret group has in mind, it's very hard to know whether or not it would violate the Constitution's prohibition on tax dollar aid to public schools, or private schools.
Just a little bit more background here. According to an article by Chad Livengood in yesterday's Detroit News, part of a white paper created by the group involves a Michigan education card, essentially a debit card, to attend a value school with the aim of an education that costs $2,000 a year less than conventional schools. So that's just a little bit more background, according to the Detroit News, Chad Livengood. Now, yesterday I spoke with a member of the Skunk Works group, Richard McClellan, who's been highly influential in GOP policy for many years. He told me he named the group and that there's nothing controversial about it or its work. Here's part of what he told me yesterday.
Mark, you have to realize the Oakland County superintendent spends a couple of $100,000 a year. They've hired a lobby, a PR firm, to attack whatever school reforms are out there. So we recognize that there's nothing you can do, because we could call it, you know, some name, and they would still attack. So if you guys want to make a big thing about the name, go ahead. I'm interested in whether or not we've got some ideas in Michigan to use technology to improve the quality of education and drive down the cost. That's the purpose. That's the name. And it was deliberately called Skunk Works because we were not using the education establishment on the grounds that they have a hard time looking at new ideas if that's just, and we're seeing it exactly that. They're attacking it before they've ever seen it. Their structural organization is always to get more money. We wanted more value for the money we spent.
Any response to what Mr. McClellan just said?
Well, sure. You know, it's not the name that concerns me, although it's certainly easy and fun to make fun of the name. But it's not the name itself that concerns me. It's the fact that this group has been meeting in secret that concerns me. And if the work that this group is engaged in is so important and so valuable, well, then let's have a little transparency here. Let's make sure that the public and legislators have an opportunity to be informed about this group's work. The fact that they are meeting in secret, I think, speaks to the fact that they've got something to hide. And their work has not included any educators, which is also cause for concern. Certainly, the people who are actually—
You know there's no educators that are part of this group?
That's what media reports have indicated. That's
okay.
Right. That's my understanding. And assuming that's true, I think that's a huge mistake.
I want to say that somebody that was appointed by, or somebody that Superintendent Flanagan is aware of, just dropped out of the group. So it's that's my rough understanding of the situation. One or two people apparently have dropped out of the group, and one of them, I think, affiliated with Superintendent Flanagan. I'm getting a little squishy here, though, so we should probably stick a little bit closer to the facts. But it's your understanding that there is no one from the education establishment that's a part of this.
That's what I have read. Now, again, it's hard to know exactly who's part of this when it's meeting in secret. But media reports, at least one or two that I've seen, have indicated that educators are not a part of this group. And if that's true, that's a cause for great concern, because when we shape education policy as a state, it's very important that we consult with those who are actually on the ground teaching kids and who are actually doing the work in local schools. There are folks who have experience. That doesn't mean they're always right about everything, but they ought to be consulted with during the decision-making process.
Clarify for us, please, if you can, have work groups, quote unquote, roughly like these, operated in the past, just more openly?
Well, I it's not unusual, obviously, to have groups that are looking at a given issue. There's nothing wrong with that. It's the secrecy and the closed nature of the group. So yes, in general, these kinds of groups have operated in a much more open way so that the public and others can give input to the group and know what they're doing. Again, I think it should be sending off alarm bells that we've got a group that's meeting in secret. What do they have to hide? What are they afraid of? And I do think that the product and the recommendations that they come up with is likely to be of questionable quality if they're not properly soliciting input from the public, from a broad array of educators and educational groups. That's the crux of my concern.
According to MERS News, your party had a really rough couple of days last week regarding budget amendments. for 2014, the 2014 budget. 0 for 73 by their accounting, and it covers film credits, public safety. There's a long list of areas where you try to get more money in the budget for various causes and essentially failed. Most failed in party line votes in the Appropriations Committee. As I understand it, Republican Joe Haveman, the chair of Appropriations, told MERS that some number of them have merit and may continue to be discussed, but the GOP needs to see where the money is coming from. Any response to that?
Well, absolutely, I've got a response to that. I mean, just a couple things. It was much less a rough couple days for Democrats and much more a rough couple days for Michigan residents, because the amendments that we were proposing were proposed in order to protect Michigan residents and in order to make sure that we're enacting policies that are going to spread opportunity and prosperity to all of our state citizens. We have been consistently fighting to increase investments in education. That's something that is so important for our state's economic future and for individual students' opportunity. We've been consistently fighting to invest more in veterans' services. That's an area where the House Republicans are not adequately investing in. We have also called for repeal of the Republican tax hikes on middle class and working families that a lot of Michigan families just recently became aware of in the past several months as they were completing their 2012 income tax returns. Mm-hmm. And importantly, to Representative Hoveman's point, we came out 2 weeks ago with our budget priorities and with specific ways to pay for all of them. And so it's no secret how we've proposed to pay for them. We've proposed to do that by accepting federal money for the expansion of Medicaid, which frees up over $200 million a year in the state's general fund budget. That's something that Governor Snyder agrees with. The House Republicans have refused to accept that federal money for ideological reasons. We've proposed to pay for it by cutting the governor's slush fund that he uses to dole out corporate welfare. We've proposed to pay for it by cracking down on demonstrated and very specific incidents of fraud and waste in state government, as indicated by audit reports that have made specific recommendations about how to save taxpayer money. These are all very common sense proposals about how to save money that could then be invested in things like investing in education, providing services to veterans, and providing tax relief to Michigan's middle-class families. And yet, it's unfortunate that the House Republicans have chosen to play politics and have refused to meaningfully consider any of our suggestions.
Yesterday, you and quite a few other Democrats made clear your support for Congressman Gary Peters, a fellow Oakland County guy, right?
That's true.
Yeah.
That's right.
Okay, you're both from Oakland County, for U.S. Senate. Tell me why you're getting behind Gary Peters.
Well, I've known Congressman Peters for 15 years, and I've always admired that the work that he's been doing for us in Washington, D.C. as a U.S. congressman. He is a moderate, pragmatic representative for us in Washington, D.C. He has really been focused on results, and he's been bringing results to the table. He's not a partisan guy. He tries to work across the aisle collaboratively with Democrats and Republicans alike to make sure that we're moving our state and our country forward. And I think that he would be a perfect U.S. senator. I think he'd bring the same commitment to working constructively to the U.S. Senate that he has so successfully brought to the U.S. House.
And I'd like to hear what you think regarding some Democratic names being kicked around as governor candidates. Former Congressman Mark Schauer.
I think former Congressman Mark Schauer and former Congressman Bart Stupak would both be excellent candidates for governor.
Stupak's pro-life, which some say would guarantee a primary battle, which a lot in your party would like to avoid.
Well, I happen to be pro-choice, but I don't think that there should be any single litmus test for a gubernatorial candidate. Again, I think that both former Congressman Mark Schauer and former Congressman Bart Stupak would be great gubernatorial nominees. Vicki Barnett has also talked about running for governor. She is currently a state representative serving with us in the state house. I think she'd be a great gubernatorial nominee.
There's still a real name awareness challenge with all three of those candidates, though, isn't there? There's been a lot of polling to suggest that a lot of people still don't know who Stupak and Schauer and certainly Vicki Barnett are.
Well, it's very true. Most Michigan residents don't know who any of the three of them are. The remarkable thing is that even though Michigan residents don't know who any of them are, they're in a dead heat, a statistical dead heat, literally even with Governor Snyder, which speaks to how deeply unpopular Governor Snyder is. And that really shouldn't be surprising. He has slashed education funding. He's raised taxes on Michigan's residents and families. And the reason why he claims to have done all these things is that he says doing so creates jobs. And yet here we are over 2 years into his governorship, and our unemployment rate is still nearly 9%, far higher than the national unemployment rate. The relatively small numbers of jobs that have been created as a result of the recovery of the auto industry, which has everything to do with Washington, D.C. assisting the industry and nothing to do with Governor Snyder's policies. So I would ask the governor, where are the jobs? Where are these jobs that you're promising us? They simply haven't materialized.
Being from Southeast Michigan, I have to ask you how you think Detroit is faring so far under Emergency Manager Kevin Orr, or what you make of that.
Yeah. Well, I think it's too early to say. I think all of us, Democrats and Republicans alike, want the best for the city of Detroit, and we certainly wish Kevin Orr well. I hope that he's successful in turning around the city. Obviously, it's very early in his tenure, and so it's too early to tell. The experiences of the other Michigan cities that have been under emergency managers have not generally been positive experiences. Most, if not all, of those cities are still languishing under emergency managers years after the appointment of the emergency manager. So we'll see. I hope that Mr. Orr is able to do a better job in Detroit than the track record of the other emergency managers in the state.
Okay. It's been great to talk with you. I'm glad we finally got you in here.
Great to be on the show, Mark. Thanks for having me.
Democratic State Representative Tim Grimmel of Oakland County. Many thanks.
Thank you.